Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Non-Resident Access to Public Records Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 20, 2013, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in McBurney v. Young. The question in this case is whether, under the Privileges and Immunities Clause of Article 4 and the Dormant Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, a state may preclude citizens of other states from enjoying the same right of access to public records that the state affords its own citizens. To discuss the case, we have Christopher Green, who is a professor at the University of Mississippi School of Law and currently visiting at the University of San Diego School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Green.
Hi, this is Christopher Green, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Mississippi, visiting this year at the University of San Diego, and I'm here to talk about McBurney v. Young, a case the Supreme Court heard a month ago in February. McBurney is a challenge to the residence-only provision of Virginia's Open Records or Freedom of Information Law, FOIA. Under the Dormant Commerce Clause, inferred from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, or 183, which, as interpreted, gives Congress the mostly exclusive power to regulate commerce among the several states, and the Privileges and Immunities Clause of Article 4, Section 2, Clause 1, or 421, which says the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. Virginia's residency requirement is somewhat unusual among FOIA laws. One of the briefs says 8 states make residency distinctions. Other briefs say only 3. There have been some repeals, narrow AG interpretations, and the like. At any rate, Virginia's restriction is something of an outlier. The Fourth Circuit here upheld the Virginia law, but the Third Circuit in 2006 struck down Delaware's similar law. Because of the circuit split, this wasn't a clear grant cert to reverse case. Indeed, at the oral argument, many justices seem sympathetic to the Fourth Circuit's analysis. The case features 2 plaintiffs. The named plaintiff, McBurney, moved from Virginia to Rhode Island after a divorce, apparently. McBurney's ex-wife stayed in Virginia, but didn't make her child support payments, and McBurney had trouble getting the Virginia Division of Child Support Enforcement, DCSE, to help out. McBurney then got upset at DCSE and filed some FOIA requests to investigate the delay. The DCSE turned him down because McBurney wasn't a resident. The second plaintiff, Hurlburt, runs a California business collecting real estate tax assessment information. A client asked him to get information from Virginia, but he couldn't because he wasn't a resident. The oral argument discussed the cost of FOIA compliance as the main rationale for the residency distinction. Virginia's FOIA statute allowed recoupment of marginal costs, but not overhead from requesters. The justices seem sympathetic, but as Justice Sotomayor mentioned, overhead cost recoupment seems to justify merely higher fees for out-of-state FOIA requests, not a total ban. It was not clear, however, whether the 183 and 421 anti-discrimination doctrines, if they apply, would allow higher fees. One repeated issue at oral argument was the fact that the barrier to out-of-staters from Virginia's law was really only a speed bump. All it requires is finding a resident to submit a FOIA request. This cuts, however, both against the burden of the law and also against the rationale of the law. As Justice Scalia said, maybe it's pointless, but there's no constitutional ban on pointless laws. McBurney, the divorcee, looking for information on his own case, did not make a Dormant Commerce Clause claim. Hurlburt, the information vendor, made the 183 claim. Now, lots of cases ban facial discrimination against out-of-state commerce. Virginia's discrimination here is obvious, but is failing to give government records to people a burden on commerce? In response to Justice Kennedy's Give Me Your Best Case question, Hurlburt offered Reno v. Condon, a 2000 case that held that the federal government could require state DMVs to keep certain personal information secret, rather than selling that information to data warehousers. The court in Reno said that information in government documents was an article of commerce, and thus subject to regulation by Congress under 183. Hurlburt argues here that Reno, plus the standard non-discrimination rule of the Dormant Commerce Clause, requires Virginia to be willing to engage in commerce regarding that information with non-residents, too. I'm skeptical of that analogy, as was Justice Kennedy. Recall Infib v. Sebelius, the healthcare case. Chief Justice Roberts, in the joint opinion, held that requiring people to engage in commerce was not the regulation of commerce. Regulate takes activity, not inaction, as its object. If you engage in commerce, Congress can tell you how to do it, but sitting back doing nothing is beyond the 183 power. Similarly, records might be articles of commerce once the state distributes them, but not when they're still in filing cabinets. Virginia's failure to release records doesn't seem like the sort of regulation or burden on commerce to which the Dormant Commerce Clause applies. Turning to the privileges and immunities issues, lots of cases since Bushrod Washington's trial court opinion in Corfield in 1825 limit 421 to fundamental rights, which the court said in Baldwin in 1978 means related to the well-being of the Union. The two plaintiffs' 421 claims are partly overlapping and partly independent. Both plaintiffs have arguments based on the pre-FOIA common law right to inspect governmental records and also on Virginia's current outlier status among FOIA regimes. Common law record inspection rights are deeply rooted in history, so they could be fundamental under Corfield. However, as Virginia points out, some courts limited that right to those with a personal interest, some limited it to judicial records, and some limited it to residents. There was dispute in the briefs about whether Nixon v. Warner Communications, a 1978 case about common law access to Nixon's tapes, whether that captured the common law right properly. Also, as Justice Scalia pointed out at the oral argument, the plaintiffs could have asserted these state common law rights directly, rather than bringing a federal suit. Unlike its FOIA law, Virginia's version of the common law right is not apparently particularly unusual. Now, much of this history has been changed with the advent of FOIA laws in the 1960s and 1970s. All 50 states and the federal government now have them. FOIA laws are not limited to those with personal interests. Commercial interests are their most common use. FOIA law's relatively recent origin raises a basic issue about Article IV privileges and immunities. Can new ones emerge over time? Corfield in 1825 referred to privileges which have at all times been enjoyed by the citizens of the several states which compose this union from the time of their becoming free, independent, and sovereign. That formulation seems to exclude the possibility of privileges emerging as a new consensus or near consensus over time. However, the petitioners stress the fact that Virginia's rule was an outlier right out of the box at the oral argument, and the court could construe privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states to encompass privileges that today are prevalent in almost all states and to ban discriminations against out-of-staters that today are outliers. However, modifying the Corfield standard to one allowing for emergent privileges seems a relatively unlikely step for the court to take. Justices Breyer and Kagan suggested that the interests in a nationwide information market might now be basic to the well-being of the Union, but it wasn't clear how committed even they were to the idea, let alone other justices. As for the plaintiff-specific claims, one key question for divorcee McBurney is whether the records he was requesting, records relating to the agency's procedures for helping enforce child support obligations, whether those records count as judicial records, access to which is well established under 421. Administrative and judicial records, though, seem distinguishable from each other, so McBurney, I think, seems out of luck. For information vendor Hurlburt, two of the important precedents are Baldwin, which said in 1978 that Montana could charge out-of-staters more for elk hunting licenses, and Piper, which said in 1985 that New Hampshire couldn't limit bar membership to residents. So are FOIA requests more like hunting elk or practicing law? Hurlburt argues that collecting data from state governments is a common calling, like practicing law, and he seems more likely to win than McBurney. One issue, though, is whether the Privileges and Immunities Clause applies to disparate impacts on common callings, as well as to direct regulations of them. Virginia imposes no direct restriction on Hurlburt's business, but only refuses to engage in a transaction that could help it. and not purposefully. The court was sympathetic to the argument that the point of the state FOIA law was simply to provide political accountability for Virginia residents, not to hinder information vendors. So is an incidental disparate impact on a common calling enough? Earlier callers seem only to offer tea leaves. In sum, lots of interesting basic conceptual issues about 183 and 421 here, but relatively low stakes because the restriction is so easily evaded.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.